Hello, hello. Welcome back to Microsoft Learn. And so if you are following us on Twitch, you should know that this is not the countdown show. This is actually Microsoft Learn. I'm here with my colleague and cloud advocate, Johan Lasorsa. Hello, Johan. How are you today?
Hi, Laurent. I'm excited to be with you today.
Fantastic. Yeah, me too. And we are doing the second session of a series of four. So we are going to talk about building a custom HTTP API using Azure Functions and Cosmos DB. And, you know, this is part of a whole series of events around serverless. Azure Functions is a serverless solution that we have. Do you want to tell us maybe a couple of words about Serverless September?
Yeah, sure. So Serverless September, as you imagine, it spans for the whole month from September. And every day there's new content, where it's videos, it's article around building application using serverless technologies. So this one will be all about serverless APIs today. And if you want to learn more and about serverless and see what's going on during this event, you can just go to this link and you'll see all the content that will be updated all throughout this month.
Exactly. So can you actually see me when you have those glasses on? Or
just a bit, but I won't keep them for the whole show.
All right, very cool. So we also have our fantastic moderators online. So please, dear audience, don't hesitate to interact. Please tell us where you come from. Tell us what is your level for this particular session. We expect you to be between beginner and intermediate, something like that. Tell us, you know, what you are working on, and please don't hesitate to ask questions as well. We have our moderator, Rene in Germany, Chris in South Africa, who are going to be able to answer to you. And sometimes we'll also answer questions on the screen with Johan together. So level is done and the products covered. We already, you know, talked about that last time, but for those of you who are now coming in new in this session, we are going to see the Azure portal. While I would say that in this particular session, we are actually not going to do any work in the Azure portal because this session is all about showing you how you can work locally with VS Code. Azure Functions, last time we spent quite a lot of time actually talking about different solutions, right? Can you remind us maybe very quickly, what did we discuss? What did we see?
So last session was about choosing the best solution, and we've talked a bit about infrastructure as a service, VM, we've talked a bit about containers, we've seen different services that can run serverless in Azure, and that's how we decided to choose Azure Function to build our API. Basically, mm-hmm. because we wanted something that's able to absorb peaks in demand, and that's also mm-hmm. cost efficient.
That's a great point, yes. And so Azure Function will allow us to do that. They allow us to write code. In the contrary of Logic Apps, which are rather a no-code solution, which Logic Apps are fantastic, they are great, but we feel that for the requirements of this project, Azure Functions is probably better. Visual Studio Code, we are going to work in Visual Studio Code, and we are in fact going to work locally on our functions. We are not going to do anything in Azure today, which sounds a little bit weird because this is actually an Azure session, but it's actually fantastic. You can develop your applications locally, you can debug them locally, and like this, you don't spend any money on the environment. It's quite comfortable. Cosmos DB is something that we are going to touch in the next session, which is going to happen next Monday. So stay tuned for that. It's a NoSQL database. And the prerequisite for this session to understand, just like last time, understanding web development, understanding JavaScript, the functions we are developing today are going to be in JavaScript, actually in TypeScript. We'll talk about the difference a little bit later. You could also do those functions in .NET or in Java or in Python or even in PowerShell. But here we are going to concentrate on JavaScript. So if you have that kind of experience, that's fantastic. If you understand HTTP verbs, because we are building an API, right? So verbs, what do we understand with verbs?
So basically, the verbs will be telling the request what kind of action you want to do, if you want to create content, if you want to get information, if you want to update content. That's basically what makes a RESTful API, and that's what we will be using today.
Exactly, and we'll talk more about that when the time comes, for sure. Ability to navigate the Azure portal, like we mentioned in this session, we are actually not going to use the Azure portal, but in other sessions. Familiar with Visual Studio Code is definitely a plus. If you're not, you can maybe catch it up, but if you have this kind of prerequisite knowledge, it will be easier for you to catch it up. And finally, understanding the architecture. I think we already passed that because we have already decided to go with an HTTP API using Azure Functions, but good to know. Understanding NoSQL databases, again, something we'll do next time when we talk about Cosmos DB. So the scenarios that we have, can you remind us quickly what is a scenario and why we want to develop those functions?
Sure. For this application, initially we wanted to work for a school supplies shop that's having issues every year at the time when it's back to school season, when everyone wants to go shopping for all these school supplies, and then
which is right now in Switzerland and in France, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's also when the server capacity is not up to the job, because every time there's downtime because of this peak demand during this season. So what we wanted to do, what we decided in the previous session, is that we will split the monolith architecture that we had previously, and we will have a separate client for the web application, which is already built. It's an Angular application, and then the focus of this session will be on refactoring the backend part, the API, into an Azure function to be able to meet the demand for this particular time of the year.
Fantastic. Yeah, and like you mentioned, we already have an Angular website. We saw it a little bit last time. I'm going to show it quickly again in a moment. This Angular website is a pure static website, meaning that there is no server interaction. And this is made possible by the fact that we are going to build this API running in a totally different server, even though it's serverless, right? We saw last time that there is actually a server. This server is managed by Microsoft. You don't have to worry about it, because you don't have to worry about the infrastructure at all. So the Angular website is available. The Cosmos DB is actually available. We are, again, right, I mentioned it again, we are actually not going to use it today, but on Monday we are going to use it, so in just a few days. So tune in if you want to see how we interact and how we save and read and write the data. And finally, we decided to go with an HTTP API with Azure Functions, but we have not implemented it yet. Last time, we have only seen a quick example in the portal, how it works. This time, we're actually going to start building those functions. And if you want to follow together with us, maybe it's a little bit complicated, maybe it's a little bit too much information, so you can definitely do that later and go, for example, to the Learn module so that you can do all the exercises that we are going to do today. There is also a complete solution in the GitHub repository. And of course, if you have multiple screens and you feel confident enough to follow with us, you are welcome to do so as well. But it's quite a lot of information. So definitely something that you can do afterwards as well. And we'll give you also a quick homework that you can do before you tune in on Monday so that you finish implementing those APIs. All right,
yeah, to remind that it's the goal of this session is to be interactive, so don't hesitate to ask questions on the chat. We'll try to answer them, either we or the moderators that are on the chat. So don't hesitate to ask anything about, and we'll try to help.
Absolutely. No, it's a great point. And this is really the strength of those live sessions, is that we are actually live in, I can prove it, it's exactly 5:40 p.m. here in Switzerland. And around the world, of course, hopefully we have people all around the world. So we definitely like to hear from you. Tell us where you're from. Tell us what you work on. And I see already that somebody said that they logged in into session one, which is really awesome. So learning objective for this session, last time we talked about the backend, what we want to do, it was a little bit more architectural and more theoretical. This time we'll go into the local development. Next time, we'll talk about bindings and how to save and read data from the Cosmos DB in a very easy manner. You'll see that almost no code, right? Just meta declaration. And finally, in the last session, which is in exactly a week, we are going to talk about deploying. And so we will see how we create the plan, which is going to host the functions on Azure, how we can build, for example, a GitHub action. In our case, we'll use a GitHub action. You can also use Azure DevOps to do that, and deploying automatically every time that something changes. So this is where we are, session 2 of 4. We are going to set up and configure the local development environment. We are going to understand how it is working, and then we'll start implementing those HTTP API endpoints in Visual Studio Code, and you'll see that we can test everything locally. So let's go into the local development environment, and I guess the big question is, why do we want to do that? So can you maybe run us through those few slides and understand why we want to go local?
Sure. There's many reasons to be able to first deploy and develop, your function locally instead of in the cloud. As we saw last time, first, it's not a terrible experience to develop your code in the portal. It's great for quick testing, but not for developing a full application. Because first is the connectivity issue. If you lose internet, or for example, if you're working in a train or something like that, you lose your work. So that's not great, obviously. You don't have all the benefits of having like the code checks that you have built in VS Code. For example, in your editor, most often you have checks for TypeScript, for JavaScript. And if you make small mistakes, it can be automatically fixed by your editor. You don't have that. Having all the tooling offline also allows you to debug your code, something that you cannot do if you're using only the online portal. So debugging is, of course, an important part of the development of your functions. And also,
bugs, right? I mean, I don't really write bugs, but I hear that for other developers, it's a big part. Yes.
Yeah, me, I always write bugs. First and then the forking code.
That's how it works.
Yeah, and also it allows you to test all your code and your function without having to deploy anything. So you have a quicker turnaround and you can do everything without paying anything because you're only working locally.
Exactly. So this is really a great experience. And of course, here we are going to use Visual Studio Code to do that. For people like me who are more of a .NET background, I like to do my functions in Visual Studio. So I have the full-blown Visual Studio. And really, the experience is very, very similar. You also run and debug everything locally before you deploy. So it's very convenient. Visual Studio Code, of course, the advantage is that it runs on Windows, but also on Linux and on Mac. So you have a totally cross-platform development experience, and we'll talk more about Visual Studio Code when we are there. So Visual Studio Code, it sounds like it's a lightweight editor, right? I use it a lot, for example, to simply edit markdown files, like text files, things like that. But now you tell me that you can actually do Azure functions, you can build things, you can debug things. So what is it built on? How do I do that?
Yeah, to do that, you have all sorts of extensions that you can use. For this project, we'll be using in particular the Azure Function extensions that install all the tooling you need to be able to develop, create the Azure Function project. That's what we will be doing a bit later. Also to debug your function and even deploy it when you're done with your code.
Yeah, that's exactly. And also another function, another extension that we are going to use is one that you actually recommended to me, and I really love it. I've been using it all the time now, every time that I'm in Visual Studio Code. It's a third-party extension because extensions don't have to come from Microsoft. Of course, in the case of the Azure extension, they are made by Microsoft. But you also have a very rich marketplace. Marketplace, it doesn't imply that you have to pay for those, right? Most of those extensions are actually totally free. And I found the one which allows me to do HTTP requests, and it's really super convenient. We'll see it in action a little bit later, and this is made by a third-party developer. So really go and check the extensions in Visual Studio Code. It's totally awesome, and it really expands the possibilities of your Visual Studio. So in order to install the requirement development environment, we ask you to go to this code, this link, sorry. And this is actually where you will find the learn module, which is detailing everything. And we are not going to run you through the development because some of the things take a little bit longer and we don't want to waste time either. So if you are watching and you have the development environment already configured, you can follow with us. If you didn't, then check. I see that René, our fantastic moderator here, pasted the code already in the chat. So you can just click there, see the instructions, but you can also totally concentrate on what we are showing you now and do that later and do the exercises later when we are done. So I think that at this point we have a first exercise and we can go and check actually what we have. So I'm just going to run you quickly through the development environment that I have. And in my case, I'm using a VM on Azure. Don't, you know, see if you see the bar on top, maybe you feel that, oh, why is he in a VM? It's very simple. It's just that it was easier for me to install everything in a VM, but you can totally have that on your local machine without any problem. And here you will see that you have your Visual Studio Code. And Visual Studio Code works with a system of folders, right? So what we can do is maybe start quickly by creating a folder or opening a folder. And what I'm going to do is just create a new folder, which is where I'm going to put everything. Let's call that Learn Live Session 2, for example. Voilà, and now I'm going to select that. And so now I have a totally blank space. I'm ready to go. But what I really wanted to show is these extension things. So here you have this icon, and this one, maybe you don't have it yet because that's the Azure extension, right, Johan?
Yes, this is where you will find all the Azure tools that will help you develop with Azure services, including Azure Function, the one we'll be using.
Perfect. And so if I click on the extensions here, I see the installed extension. I see that I have the Azure Function extension installed already. There is also one called Azure Account. I don't remember installing that. So what happened here?
So this one comes automatically when you install any Azure extension. It's basically installed once to manage your Azure account for all the other extensions. So you don't have to log in every time you use a new extension.
Okay, fantastic. So basically, I'm set up now. And here we see this REST client extension. And again, this is the one that you recommended to me. I really like it. This is the one which is going to allow me to put, to place HTTP requests a little bit later from a simple text file. And this is very, very convenient. So those are the three extensions that I have installed. Now, possibly, if you have been working with Visual Studio Code before, you may have way more extensions than that. In fact, in my local installation, I have more than that, but here you can see, and if you want to install another one, you can just search for them. For example, I can say Azure, and then I see a whole lot of extensions for Azure that you can install. So that's pretty much the development environment now. But let's go back to the slides and let's talk about a little bit more theory about triggers and how do we do those HTTP APIs? What are we going to build? So I think that when we did, if I remember correctly, right, when we did the previous example in the portal, we saw that you have a list of triggers and we selected the HTTP trigger. So how does it function? How does it work? And why do we need those triggers?
Basically, the triggers is how you will decide when the code that you just wrote in a function will be executed. That's what will kick off the code and run it. And that's also that's also the event that will just start, like when the function will really be executed. And that's also what makes it efficient when we are talking about cost, because it will only run when something triggers it.
Right. And so here in that case, we are going to use what we call an HTTP trigger, which is an invocation trigger. It's really what starts the whole development. And if we do a kind of parallel with running code, I was a client developer before, for example, on a mobile phone or on a device, it's also event-based, right? Basically, you react when something happens. For example, the user clicks a button, or maybe you have a timer, which which kicks every hour or something like that. And here it's exactly the same. Those events have to be understood in exactly the same manner. And so last time we talked a little bit about the context and the request. We'll go a little bit deeper into that when we start the implementation. But this is just a quick example. It's a very, very simple function. As you can see, 4 lines of code and already we have a function, right?
Yes, that's the best thing about function is basically you can already focus on what matters, your business code, and not what's around it.
Yeah, no, this is really cool. Very, very powerful. So triggers, right? Going back to the theory, let's say that you're sound asleep, you have a plane soon. I hope to have a plane soon, even maybe at 4 a.m. Right now, it's not the case. But if I'm sound asleep, I need something to wake me up, right? And so this is exactly what's going to happen here. I set my alarm. And we have totally different types of trigger. And importantly, you already mentioned that quickly, functions sleep until they are triggered, which makes them cost efficient, right? This is really the kind of the key of the whole thing. Yeah?
Yes, that's also what makes it efficient for scaling, because actually, if at once you get all kinds of triggers and there is many demand, like a peak at some points, the system will know that he have to scale, so he know that he have to create more instances to match this demand, and that's what makes it also efficient for scaling. And as soon as the demand fall off, it will also kill the unused instances. So that's what make it you pay less and basically make you that way you pay only for what's used. So if you have only a peak for example on a few days at when the school starts opening, you will only pay for these few days and you don't have to pay like for the extra instances for the whole year.
Right, exactly. And let's talk about the types of triggers, because we saw already in the previous session that we had a whole list. And so let's summarize a little bit. So can you tell us more, like, what would you use a timer trigger for example?
Timer trigger can be used for recurrent job. You can think of cron, for example, if you want to have something like be executed, for example, every week. I can think of, for example, cleaning a database. If you want like to go through some job script you want to run regularly, a timer is best for that. You can also have HTTP, like as you said, that's what we will be using for our API. Every time we receive a request, we will execute a function.
Exactly.
And also, you can monitor for any changes in other Azure services. For example, if you upload a file to a file storage, you can read this file. If it's an image, you can maybe resize it to create a thumbnail, and you can just put it in a queue, for example, to trigger another services and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so those are kind of three major triggers. Those are probably the ones that people will use the most. There are also other kind of triggers, which are maybe a little bit different, things like durable functions, for example, etc. We're not going to go into that in the session here because it's more of a beginner to intermediate session. But really, I would say HTTP trigger is probably the widest usage of all, probably timer trigger, very convenient. I use a timer trigger, for example, to do some backups at regular intervals. So every day we'll kick and do things. And if you have, for example, blob, so it's kind of a file system storage, we could say in the cloud, right? If you upload a picture, for example, and then you want to do some processing, you can do that. So this is the kind of things we have. And in our case, we are going to use an HTTP trigger. It's kind of in the name of the session already. But if you wanted to use or to find a use case for a timer trigger, so our viewers can maybe take a moment to think about that. I'm going to read the answers quickly because maybe we have somebody who cannot read so well. So send appointment reminders to customers every day at 8 a.m., right? That would be the first use case. Allowing a user to mark a product as a favorite when he's using a mobile client application. And number three, the choice number three would be analyzing the content of an image, upload it to blob storage and saving the result in Cosmos DB. So our users can maybe just take a few moments to answer. I see that Rene is a little bit cheating, right? Because he should know the answer probably, but who else is talking? Okay, we have option one. Well, I think this is actually correct, right? Johan, what can you tell us about those different choices?
Yes, as that's exactly the example we just talked about. And so if you want to send a reminder for customers every day, that's the perfect usage for a time trigger, because you set it once and every day it will wake up your function and execute the code to send those reminders.
Exactly. And maybe for the second example, what would you use? What kind of trigger would you use?
Maybe I would use like an Azure service trigger, for example. If the product was marked as a favorite in a Cosmos DB, I will get that event and then update what I need on the application.
Okay, or I think what's going on here is they say, okay, when you're using your mobile client application and you want to mark the favorite, that could be an HTTP API, for example.
Oh,
right?
Sorry, I didn't understand it that way. I thought of a more complex example, sorry.
Yeah, and then for the last one, the number three, analyzing the content of an image. So there are different solutions to that. Like you could use a blob trigger. We have blob triggers. Personally, I prefer to use something else, which is called an event grid trigger. And the only reason why I prefer that is that because I found out that they seem to work a little bit more reliably and especially a little bit faster. But those are things that we are not going to detail today. Yes, like Rob mentions online, you could also totally use a timer trigger to do some bulk processing of functions of images if you want. For example, at a time, if you need to do this bulk processing using an expensive virtual machine or whatever, you could like this optimize the usage of your machine. So this is also a possibility. All right, so here we are going to use an HTTP trigger. So how is that going to work and what are we going to do with this particular thing? So on the next slide here, we see a URL, and we also see here a little bit of code. Can you explain to us what is going on here on this slide?
Okay, so this is what we will be building when we are talking about REST APIs. We're mostly talking about how we organize the routes of our API. So in that case, so we can get information about a particular product which have the ID notebook A1. So you can see that the ID has this part at the end of the URL, and the first part of the URL is called product. That's the resource you want to access to. And how you access this resource, as we said previously, is using the different HTTP verb. For example, in this example, if you want to get the JSON information about this particular product, you just hit the root product and put the ID also in the URL and use the get verb, just meaning that you want to retrieve the data.
Fantastic. And one thing which is confusing me just a little bit is that in the previous example, I remember that we were also passing a parameter, but it was after a question mark, right? So we had question mark name equals, and then I think I wrote Johan, I wrote your name. And here we don't have any question mark. So what is the concept here?
That's just two different ways of passing parameters. This one is part of the URL, meaning if you want information about this particular product, it's required. When you're using a question mark, it's basically when you have optional parameters. Like we did last time, the API was also working if you did not pass a name to the function. So that's right. When you choose to decide when using like a question mark parameter or just put it directly in the URL.
Excellent. And also one thing which I appreciate here is that the URL looks very clean, right? I mean, there is no, every time you have question mark and everything, I feel that maybe we could do it a little bit better. So this is a concept of routing, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And I see that we have Michael Crump on the stream. So it makes me very happy. Hello, Michael. A good friend and colleague of us who is apparently looking at us. And I'm a little bit nervous now because Michael is a great streamer as well. So if you haven't seen Michael's stream, then make sure to catch it when it's playing. All right, so moving on, we are going to use URLs and HTTP verbs, like we said. So here we have kind of a quick, screenshot of the website that we saw last time. And here we have a products page. And when you click on this products page, you are going to redirect you to a URL using a get. And then something is going to happen. What's going to happen is that we are going to get some JSON from the server. But now we also have the possibility to get one specific product, right? And so this is the example we had before. Notice that in that case, there is no S at the end of product, right? This is get a specific product. And then we have an ID. So this is the ID of the product. But now we also have another possibility, which is creating a product or editing an existing product. So can you maybe tell us a little bit more about those two verbs, post and put?
Sure, that works a bit like when you want to read the information. Basically, you have different verbs for different meaning. And when you want to create something, usually you use the verb post. And when you want to create something new that doesn't exist already, you can use like the general URL, which is the products one with an S. And if you want to update a particular product, that's like when you want to get the information about a particular product, you also have to pass the ID of this product in the URL. And in this case, you have to use the put verb, which means that you want to update maybe only part of the data.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is actually a kind of a convention, right? It's not absolutely necessary, technically speaking, to use put. You could use post, but cleaning, like having a really clean API like that with different verbs for different things, totally makes sense. And it's going to help you to have a very clean code as well, because we'll see later that you could absolutely have two URLs which are exactly the same URLs but with different verbs and which are directed to different functions. Like this, you have a very nice subdivision of your code. So this is really cool. All right, so moving on, we are going to have to also read some or to pass some input data to the function, the parameters that we talked about. And this is going to be done by different mechanisms. So let's talk a little bit about that. And we go into the function.json file. So like the name shows, it's going to be a JSON-based file. And I believe that this is where you have some metadata. So how is it working? And why do we have like two files for one function?
So this is when you will use the VS Code extension to create a new function. It will create these two files. The first one, index.ts, is our TypeScript file. This is where you will have to write the code for your function. And the other file that is created is this function.json file. As you said, it's all metadata about this function. And in particular, one thing that will be interesting for us is these binding sections. And these bindings is where you will define the data that will come in and also that the data that will come out. And in this case, we will want to get data from the parameters of the URL.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's excellent. So maybe it would be a good place to actually do a quick exercise and to go into the exercise that we want to do. So I'm going to quit here the slideshow. Let's go back to the VMs that I have. And the first thing I want to show you is that those exercises that we are going to do are all into this learn module. So the learn module, I'm pretty sure that our fantastic moderators are going to put the link in the chat in case you want to follow as we go. And you may remember that last time we have already created our first function in the Azure portal. We told you that you need a sandbox for that. In this session, you actually don't need the sandbox because we will be developing fully locally. So you don't need to do that. But we can move on to the next exercise, setting up the local environment. As you can see, you have everything you need. Like I said in the beginning, we are not actually going to do that in this session to avoid spending too much time on that. So this is something you can do at home if you don't have that already. But now we have the possibility to go and create the first function. And like this will help understanding those concepts. So here we have Visual Studio Code. We have already created a new folder. And one thing I can do is start by creating a new Azure function. And so if I understand properly, Johan, this is all going to happen in the Azure extension, right? So that's where I want to click.
Exactly. You can start everything from there.
Perfect. So I imagine that I have to create a new project. It sounds logical, right? There is the same icon here. So I imagine that I can do both things here. And now it's going to ask me, do you want to use actually the folder where we are now? So I'm going to say, yes, I want to use this folder. And now I can select some languages. So can you tell us more? What should I choose here?
As you said, we decided before that we will be using TypeScript, but you can see that there's various different languages that you could have used. I know you would have preferred to use C#, but
okay.
For this session, we'll rely on TypeScript.
No, I'm totally okay with TypeScript, and why wouldn't I use JavaScript? Because the developers know maybe JavaScript well from web development, etc., client side development. So what is the advantage of TypeScript?
So the benefits of using TypeScript is first that you get better support from the editor. It will be able to catch more errors directly in your code if some things do not match the type of the function. You can basically write, it's compatible entirely with JavaScript. So JavaScript code is a valid TypeScript code, but with the added benefits that you get type inference. So basically, there will be checks that make sure that your code will be okay.
Perfect. And that goes also well into my heart, because like you say, I'm more of a C# person, and the person who actually created TypeScript, or invented TypeScript if you want, is also the person who developed C#, Anders Helsberg, who's a colleague of ours and also a good friend. Cool. So now I need to select a trigger. And so we talked about those triggers last time. We already know that we want to use an HTTP trigger. So let's go on that. And I need to give a name to this function. So here in the learn module, you see that we have a suggestion to use here getProduct as a name for this function. So let's do that. And now I'm going to type enter. And the authorization level, again, here it tells me use anonymous. While I do that, why don't you tell us quickly a little bit about those authorization level and what they mean?
Sure, that's something we'll see more in details in the last session, but this is basically if you want to protect your API during development, if you want to make it available to everyone to call, or if you want to have some level of security.
Perfect.
So
okay.
Using anonymous means that everyone can call your function. But since we are developing locally for now, it's not that important.
It doesn't actually make a difference, right, when you develop locally. So now I see a little bit of code here. I notice strong similarities with what we saw before, in the sense that we have this entry point for the function, right? We have an import. Here it's red. I don't like red too much, but I imagine that probably is going to disappear at some point, right? It's a package or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's because you don't have installed the package. Actually, I think we didn't tell the viewers in the beginning when we were talking about the setup, but to run all the project, you have to install Node.js. So I'm sure you have already installed Node.js beforehand, but we saw the VS Code part, but not that you needed Node.js to run everything.
Yes, and so again, this is part of the setup local development environment module. I went quite quickly through that, but here it says indeed you need to install a few things, including Node.js. So this is why it's going to work. Let's go back here to the code. And so we see context log, which tells me that this is very similar to what we had in the portal, right? It's going to log something. It's going to obtain the name parameter here from the query string, and then it's going to return a response. And it totally reminds me of what we did last time in the portal. But one thing that we didn't see last time is that we also have this function.json. And so this is where we define some additional information about the function, right? Can you maybe quickly tell us what we see here?
Here we see that you can see already that you set the authorization level to anonymous, the option that you choose during the creation of the project. You can see that this code for this function will be triggered by an HTTP trigger. That's the type you see there. The direction in, we'll dive in more about that in the next session, but that means that we will receive data from the trigger, basically the parameter from the request. Mm-hmm. We will receive it in the rec object. And the methods are all the HTTP verbs that we will support for this function. So
we'll see more an example later. I know about those methods. I remember seeing that. So we can talk about that in a moment, maybe. Oh, sorry, I didn't want to cut you, but what I mean is that we'll go more in details into those methods, right, in a moment. So at this point, I should be able to run something, right, because I have here code. I have a module which is missing, but which should be downloaded at some point. And I have all the meta information. So how can I run this?
You can go to the execute tab of VS Code.
Okay, it looks like this little bug guy. I hope I don't have bugs though. And then here I see yes. I can attach to node function. That sounds pretty good, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's try that.
Let's try that, exactly. So we'll see. So here I see a console opening, terminal, npm install. I know npm because I read newspapers. I know that it's a package manager, right?
That's what will actually fix your error, and there it's gone because it has installed Azure Function package.
This is cool. Yeah, I see that it's gone. And now I see a lot of information. And very cool. Now I see that there is actually a URL in the console. So it means that I should be able to do something. So why don't I control click on that? It's going to actually open the web browser. And it works just like before, just like we did the last time. Here it tells me, OK, I'm missing a name, right? So let's do that with a name. Name equals, let's do Lohun this time. I did Johan last time, right? And so it works. Which also means that I can probably go and change the response here. And then I imagine I would have to restart the thing and then it would work. So basically the code is now totally local. It is on my machine. I didn't deploy anything to Azure, but yet I have something working. And notice that it says here localhost, which means that it is running here on your local machine at port 7071, which is the default port for functions. You can also change that. So anyway, this is what we have. So it seems to be working. So now we can probably go back to the slides. And I believe the next thing we can do is talk a little bit about those, about how we are going to change the route and how to make this a little bit easier to use. Because right now, if we go back, we see that we have API slash get products, and then we have a big G and a big P. It sounds a little bit weird, and probably we can do that a little bit better. So let's go back to the slides and let's talk about those routes and those binding expressions and how it works. So we mentioned that already before, right? We said that we can have parameters. So this is how it works. Why do we have curly brackets here?
This is because it's a special syntax that means that we want to use a binding expression in there. That means that basically we want to extract that part of the URL into the product ID variable parameter that we will get through the context object.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So this is what is going to allow us to read something. And how am I going to access that? Because here it's part of the URL, but in the code we saw before, I was extracting it from an object, from the request.query. I think here we don't have a query, right? So how does it work?
You have basically two options. I will show the first one. The context object is where you can do many things. You saw in the code you just showed that you can write your application logs in there. Mm-hmm. You can also, that's what also we use to write the response objects. Basically the JSON you want to return from the function, and that's also what you can use to read the parameters from the URL. So if you just advance the slide, you can just use, like I said, this object for data input and output, and we will use that to retrieve a special property that's called binding data.
And
from there, you will find our binding expression that you just defined in the roots. But as you saw in the code you generated in VS Code, there's also another option that is rec.params. It will be basically the same thing as you get there, but it will be parsed, meaning that all you get from binding data will always be strings. And if you have objects, for example, JSON data, and you want to access the subproperties and things like that, it's best to access all the input values directly from the rec object.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's awesome. So that's going to be useful. And the other thing that is going to be useful is that so far we have just returned a simple string, right? We have said, hello, Lohun, hello, Johan. And I know that JSON is strings, but it's kind of annoying to have to build the whole string myself. And since JSON, the JS in JSON is JavaScript, it's a JavaScript object notation, I'm pretty sure there is a way better way to do that without having to build the whole response myself, right? So how does it work?
So basically, the first thing I think we'll be talking about is how to return the JSON part to the caller. Mm-hmm. So what's nice is that when the client will make the GET request, you can build the response you want, like a JavaScript object. and okay. The Azure runtime will be able to convert it automatically to JSON. What you only have to say is the add the special header to say to the browser, okay, the content type for this object is JSON, it's not text.
Okay, that's really cool. So what we see here is that in the body, in the we got some information. We're able to return that information in the body using a simple string. But here on the second example, in the second half of the screen, we are returning actually an object, right? That's what the curly brackets are for in the body, yes. Just after the body. And that's going to be automatically converted to a string, to a JSON, which then after that I can use, for example, in my .NET application or whatever client we are using, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, fantastic. No, this is really cool. That's going to make my life easier. Now, you have mentioned a little bit about the HTTP request object and what it does. So we have the context, which is more accessing unparsed data. So everything is a string. So we can get the information as a string. And then we have the rec object, which is also allowing me to see data and also to understand things about the request. What would be a good example here?
You can see from where the request came from. You can see the URL of the website that called our API. You can see all the headers from the request. You can see all kind of the information, basically, of this particular HTTP request.
Very cool. For example, user agent or other kind of things which can be useful in deciding what we do when we process the data. So really a lot of information there. And so as we have seen before, we had the context where we can use to actually read some data, but we can also here obtain some data using here the body data property of the request.body. So that's also another way to obtain information. So this is cool. All right. Good. So let's go back to the exercise. And what we can do here is build a little bit more, something a little bit more interesting, because here we have this simple, very simple function. It's actually the default code. I'm going to close the here the terminal to have a little bit more space. And now I want to proceed with the implementation here. So one thing that we see is that we have for each function, we have here one folder which was created. So here we have get product. We just have one function at the time. And then we have other information here. When we create the function, there is actually a sample.dat which is created. That's a file which for us is not relevant. So we can just safely delete it. All right. I'm going to remove here this notification. So really, I'm just interested in the function.json and here the index.ts. So the very first thing I would like to do is build something where I can get where I can get the product ID, right? So this is get product, I need the parameter. So how do I do that?
For that, in the binding section, exactly like you are, just after the methods array, you can add a new parameter called root.
Okay, so I'm going, now I see that I have IntelliSense, so this is pretty cool, all right.
And then you can specify the root where you want to access this function. So by default, it will use the name of the folder that contains the function. So for us, it was get product. So by default, it was like this root product. And then you can add a slash and use the curly bracket with product ID if you want to retrieve a particular ID, a particular parameter from the URL.
Makes sense. And so this curly bracket indicates that it's a parameter that we can obtain from the, for example, from the context object, right?
Exactly.
Oh, cool. So now I can go and retrieve that, right? So I'm going to do here, maybe let's remove something here. And then I can say, all right, I'm going to get the product ID. So let's do product ID equals. What should I type now?
You can create directly a JavaScript object. That's what we will return. You want to get only the product ID.
Yeah, cool. So you can get
context from, it was binding data.
Okay, and then product ID, I imagine, right? Perfect. And so now I should have it. And now as a first test, what we can say is we can maybe return that, right? And say body is you asked for, and then plus, Does it work like that? I imagine. I'm not a JavaScript expert, as you can see, but it should work, right?
Yes.
Cool. So now there are a few things that I want to see. So let's try that. First thing, I want to see if I can run this. All right. Did I do an error or something? I don't think so, but you never know. So let's see. Okay, it's starting just like before. All right. And by the way, one thing we can say while it's starting is that this is not a simulation of the environment, right, that we are running here.
No, yes, it's the exact same runtime that is used on Azure. So you're sure that if your code works locally, it will also run on Azure because that's exactly the same runtime. You're basically running Azure on your VM.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool, yeah. Well, a small part of Azure, we should say. But so let's try. The first thing I want to try is just to pass something which should work, right? I say, all right, I'm going to pass here a product ID. And I see that, okay, it was actually extracted properly. This is great. But what I would like to see also, because I know that somebody is going to try to fool me and they are going to try to do something like that without any ID. Aha, that's interesting. So what happened here? Why do I get 404?
By default, 404 means that the function was not found because you didn't define a route for this particular URL. And okay. What's nice with Azure function is basically it's returning 404 for free, meaning that your code wasn't even triggered because for the Azure function, you didn't define any route for this particular URL. So it has no code to run for matching this route, and that means that you don't have to pay anything in case of errors like that.
Now, that's really cool because, of course, it's going to save me money because if somebody tries to do something which is not allowed, then I don't even execute the code at all. So this is really good. Now, there is another thing which is bugging me a little bit, and this is where I'm going to introduce this this extension that we talked about before. So let's go into here, into the code. I'm going to move this bar, if I can move it a little bit out of the way. And what I'm going to do here is that I'm going to add a new file, and I'm going to call it api.http. It could be any name as long as I have the .http extension. And now I'm going to put here some URLs, and this is part of the extension that we talked about before, right? This is this HTTP extension, if I see here the installed extension, the REST client extension that we are going to use to send some requests. And the reason why I need this extension is that right now when we were into the web browser, I was always using a GET, all right? Because web browsers do a GET. They can do a POST sometimes if you have a form, etc., but it's relatively complicated. It's something we are not going to do here. Here I did a simple GET, and I can totally do a GET here. For example, I'm going to change the URL here to make it work. And if I send the request, what we see now is that everything is going to happen here directly in the Visual Studio Code. So I don't have a web browser. And this is quite convenient. So now I can fix it and say, all right, let's do 1, 2, 3, 4 like before, send the request. Now it works fine. And I can also do a POST. Now, this is a little bit weird because a POST in this case doesn't quite make sense, right? So for example, I can say, all right, I'm going to do a POST to this URL, but strictly speaking, a GET obtains some information and a POST writes some information. Here, we are not writing any information. So I should really avoid this POST. How can I do that? I want just a GET here.
If you want that, you can go back to the function.json file.
Okay. I remember I saw those routes before, right? So it probably is there. Okay.
Yeah, and there's these methods. And if you just remove the post method, that means that you only allow GET requests.
Oh, very cool. So now I'm going to save that. I'm going to rerun it because I'm kind of curious what's going to happen if I try to post now. So let's see. Let's run that again. And then we'll try again. So you see that this api.http file is basically just a text file. It's quite convenient because you can also commit it to your GitHub repo. Like this, you have everything, all your test cases saved in the same location. I see a change already. There is only a GET now here, right? I had GET, POST before. So it seems to work fine. Let's try here to send a request to a GET. It works. But if I send a POST now, I get 404 not found, which is great. So the route is still there, but the method doesn't work. And so again, it works just fine. I see that Rene says that TypeScript is very similar to C Sharp. Right, that's how they sold me to C Sharp. They told me it was very similar to Java. So I see that, you know, we go in circles, right? All right, very cool. So now we have actually modified the route. We have modified the methods. It's pretty cool. So we have advanced quite a bit. And now maybe we can go back quickly to the exercise case. So let's go back here and let's move on a little bit here. So this we have done already. We have configured or created the function. Now we have configured the action. So we have removed here the post. Now we only have get. This is cool. We have actually changed the URL route of the function before. So we went a little bit in a different order, but this is here explained how you need to do that. So as a reminder, you go here into the function.json and you add the route with those curly brackets. Very cool. And then after that, we are going to actually read the data. And again, we did that already. We have read here using context.data. Now I see that here we can do something else, right? We can do rec.params.productId. So would that work exactly the same? What's happening here?
Basically, as for you get data from the URL, it will always be strings. But for that, it's basically an alias to what you just used in the context object. It's basically exactly the same thing. You will get the same data here.
Okay, so in that case, we get exactly the same data. So there could be a possibility to actually parse, like if we have a JSON object or something, to parse it automatically. That's what you say?
Yes, but it will be more useful for the body when you will try to send something to the server, for example, to create a new product or something like that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. All right. Oh, wow. Somebody is admiring our accent, as you can see. That's cool. I didn't think of our accent as sexy, but apparently that's what it is. So this is cool. Thank you so much for your kind words. I appreciate that. All right. So moving on, now we can also return some data. And so far we have only written strings like we saw. So how do we work and how do we do that? Can you maybe explain to us the code? I'm going to take this code and copy it and then we'll try to make it work, right?
Sure.
Okay, so let me paste that first, and then we'll go string by line by line. Actually, I do need the product ID, so I'm not going to remove the product ID line. I'm going to remove only that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do we do here? First of all, I see const. Now, this is interesting because when I was doing JavaScript long time ago, there was var everywhere, and now we have const. So what's happening here?
Yeah, basically, I didn't catch your mistake before, but I saw that you used a var, and you should have used const also for the product ID, because basically, you don't mean to reassign this particular variable. Same thing for loaded product. Other than that, so I think using let everywhere is better than using var, because it will lend you to making less mistakes with the code.
Okay, good to know. So what you say is that const is okay. It means that I'm not going to rewrite that. So this is something we cannot do in C Sharp, and hence my error. You cannot define a const inside the function, inside the method. It has to be outside. So now we have the product ID. Now, what do we do here? I see that I have curly bracket. That's an object, right?
Yes, basically, it's creating a new JavaScript object. And there you can define properties, like, for example, the ID. You can define a name and the description. So just like that, you define a new object that we will use when we'll try to create the response object.
Oh, that's interesting. So what I find interesting here is that those properties are not in quotes, right? So it's not JSON, actually. It's an actual object that we are creating here.
Exactly. It's only when you're using JSON that you have to use quotes. Here, it's a plain JavaScript object, not JSON.
That's really interesting. Okay, very cool. And then after that, we do context.res. All right. So what is this res object?
This res object is the response object. So by doing by assigning this object, that's how you create the response you want to send to the one who asked for this particular request that called this code. So what we want to do here is to send some JSON instead of previously we send a string. So now this time we want it to be JSON. So that's why we had a special header. So this either you add this content type property and you set it to application JSON. So this particular line application slash JSON is called a MIME type. It's what makes your browser or whatever you're using to call this API understand this particular request and allows it to interpret what kind of data it is. So by saying it's JSON, it allows it the particular library or framework you're using to access and make this request and read this data to parse it and retrieve the actual object from the data.
Okay, very cool. And for example, if you were, I don't know, creating a picture on the fly on your server side and then sending it back, you would adapt that to be, for example, image slash JPEG or image slash PNG. So that gives information to the client about what he's expecting. And then we have the body. And here I see again that we have those curly brackets. So what do we see here?
So here, by sending the body, you send the actual data that you want to send with the answer. And here, I think we have an interesting question in the chat. And yes, actually, we don't have to serialize our JavaScript object. As you said before, it's not JSON at this point. It's purely JavaScript. And you don't have to serialize it before returning it to the assigning it, sorry, to the body, because that's what the Azure Function Runtime will do for you. It will just detect that instead of assigning a string to the body, you just created a new object, and it will automatically serialize that object to JSON.
That's very convenient. And in fact, I'm very happy to say that even though I'm doing .NET, which is not JavaScript, but still handles JSON, JavaScript object notation, when you do a function in .NET, you also don't need to explicitly serialize the result. You can just pass the result to the function, and then the function is going to serialize to JSON. Now, of course, if you wanted to choose another protocol, you could do that as well. But here, JSON is really very often used for these kind of things. So that's pretty cool. So it all gets us back in a certain scenario to this binding here. We have a binding of type HTTP, which goes outside of the function, right? And which is named res. And as we can see here, we have context.res, and so it's the same name. So like this, you can totally see everything together. So this is cool. Another cool question, maybe you know the answer, Johan. If you wanted to return XML, what would you have to do instead of JSON?
Actually, I'm not sure, because since I'm a JavaScript guy, I mostly use only JSON. The last time I used XML like was maybe 15 years ago. So actually, I don't know the answer to this question.
Yeah, so I'm not totally sure either. What I can tell you is that changing the content type here is not automatically going to make things happen in XML. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. I know that in .NET, at least, there is a way to actually ask your function to return XML. But to be honest, I never did that as well. So again, sorry about that. But I'm sure that if you check the documentation about Azure Functions, you can see how to do that. Of course, one simple way would be to just build the response yourself. And like this, it wouldn't be automatically serialized, but you would do the serialization yourself. All right, so now we have expanded a little bit our product ID. So let's see if it works. And I'm going to run this, all right? Hopefully I didn't mistype or miscopied anything. Let's see. So this is starting. It's actually pretty fast, so this is good. We should have a get. The route didn't change. Everything is going to work in the same manner. But this time, if I go here and send the request, we are going to see here we go, we are going to see that we have actually an object named product, and we see that it is a JSON object which was returned, which means that I can totally go and deserialize that in my client. I often build mobile applications using Xamarin. It's a cross-platform framework which works on iOS and Android and even on Windows using C#. So, and very routinely, I will call an API, get some JSON back, deserialize it. So this is pretty cool. This is working great. Now, maybe we can do, maybe we can build another function, I would say. So let's see how we can extract some complex data from the request body. And in that case, we are going to use another function which is going to react to a post. And the scenario here is that this is what we do if we want to write a new object to the database, right, Johan?
Exactly. So it's best, as you say, to create a new function for that and see how it will work.
Okay, very cool. So let's try. So I'm going to go back here. Let's go back to the Azure extension. I have my local project. I have my functions. Right now, I just have one of them. So now imagine that I can create a new function, right? So here I see this small icon. It sounds like it's the correct one. I know that I want an HTTP trigger again. So we did that again. And then after that, we need here to put a name. So let's take here, according to the instruction, create product. All right, press enter. Again, we go anonymous, right? It's the same scenario as before. And now we see I have a little bit too many things open. So let me clean up a little bit here. That's a difficulty on this small screen in 1920 times 1080. But now I see that I have another function which was created with exactly the same scenario. If I go back here, now I see that I have a new folder, create product. And I have again the sample data that I can delete. Let's do that. And I have the function.json. So this time, according to the description here, I want to do a post only. All right. So let's go back here and I'm just going to remove the get, right?
Exactly.
Perfect. Now,
maybe you would like also to address the root.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do that. Root equals. So what should I put here?
I think in the instruction it was like products, but with an S this time.
Okay. Oh no, this is the creation of the product, right?
Yes.
So we don't get all the products here. We are just creating one. So it's still going to be product without an S. So now I'm a little bit worried that there is a conflict with the previous one because the previous one was product slash and then an ID. Here I also have product. Is it going to get confused or is it clear?
No, because like as you tried before, when you were using just product with the previous API without having defined nothing else, it was a 404 error, meaning that the runtime will know that it's a different URL. And moreover, you're using a different verb. So I think you'll be totally fine here.
Okay, very cool. I want to correct something that I said before. According to René, you should be able to just change the content type to text XML and it will do the magic. That's interesting. We can totally try it out if we have a little bit time. But first of all, let's continue to create this one. So here I have created product. Another thing which makes it unique is that the root in the other one is a get and this root is a post, right? So there is literally no confusion possible here. So that's really cool. So now I have created that. Let's go back here to the TypeScript code. And I'm going to go and remove that. I leave the log because it's a good idea to see when things happen. And then I can probably go and copy that code. And then we can go line by line and understand what's going on here. So first of all, we expect a body, right? We expect something. What are we going to get?
So basically, if you expect something, that means that you want to receive some data from an object, so you will get JSON. But as we said, when you will try to retry the data from this reg.body property, it will automatically be passed, so you will get directly here the JavaScript data. So you won't have to pass the JSON here.
That's really cool. So then after that, we are going to expect here something called product to create, all right? And if we don't get it from the body, we will return 400, which is basically something saying, okay, it's a bad request. You need to give me more information to be able to run. So here we see that this is a different case from before where we had a 404, where the function was not executed at all. Here it's going to be executed, so it's going to cost something. Well, you know, you can run functions many, many times and not pay anything, but at some point you start paying something. So here you're going to start actually going into the consumption mode, but it's still good that we can actually catch the error and say, all right, you need to do something. And then after that, we are just going, if I understand properly what it does here, we are going to return a 200, which means okay. And we are just going to return the product that we obtained. So here we are not saving anything to any database, right, Johan?
Yeah, that will be for the next session. So just checking that everything works in our code and that we are able to retrieve the data from a post request correctly.
Excellent. So,
yeah, and we make sure also that these products have an ID that's defined and that's not just like an empty string or something like that.
Excellent. So now we are going to actually try things out. So I did prepare here a new segment that we are going to put in our HTTP. All right, we have something here. And maybe I'm going to simplify that a little bit because we are just trying things out. So let's go back to the .http code. I'm going to add this. As you can see, you can create a new section or it's just a comment really using this syntax. So the URL is going to be the same URL as before without slash and the product ID, right? Because this is a root we defined. And then really the only thing that we expect is the ID itself. That's the thing we need to have. The rest is pretty much a given, but it's cool because we have some numbers, we have some string. Actually, it should work this way, right? So let's try it out. And one thing I can do, we said before we can debug, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. So I can put a breakpoint, right?
Yeah, maybe we can try it to show what works.
All right, look at that. So I'm putting a breakpoint here. I'm going to go back to the run thing. Let's run that. Okay. Okay, so it's going to start. Yeah, it's an important precision that René made, right? So the question was, is Azure serverless? And the answer is, what we are doing here is using serverless functions. Functions are one of the many ways to do serverless code in Azure. And of course, in Azure, you have a whole range of services, all the way from virtual machines to containers to Kubernetes to serverless, you know, platform as a service, et cetera, et cetera. So really a lot of things. So now I see that I have two URLs, which is pretty cool because it tells me that this is actually working, right? I have create product, I have get product. The only difference being the method, that's cool. So let's go here and let's try to send this request. So I'm sending here a post at this URL with, here you can see the payload that I'm sending. I think I could also add the in the header, I could also say that it's JSON, but I think it actually works without specifying. All right, I'm hitting the breakpoint. That's awesome. So this is working fine. I can step over. Let's inspect this object. Seems very much like what I sent. I see that the price has been parsed to an integer. So it's actually working, right?
And yes, and that's right, because if I say something this way dumb, can, right? Oh, sorry.
No, sorry. So it's working fine, right?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So let's see if we have an ID. Yes, we have an ID. That's cool. It works. And then if I return that, let's see what's going on. All right. And now I see that I got, again, small screen, moving things aside. I get the product back. And so basically my function is working now. So this is cool. We have built two functions, two endpoints for this particular function. Now, at the end, we will actually need more of those endpoints. And here you have the description of how you can do that. So we will expect update product and get product. Maybe we will let the viewers do that at home. What do you think? A little bit homework?
Yes, I think it will be best to do that for the next time.
Okay, it's a good idea, right? But one thing I really want to try, though, and this is really totally unscripted right now, I really want to try this return thing. So let's try to go here. And
first, sorry to cut you, Laurent. First, yep. Don't you want to test if the 400 error is catched correctly? For example, if you don't have an ID to your post request?
Excellent question. So let's rerun that so we can see if really the code is working properly the whole way, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is starting, all right. Okay, I'm going to prepare here my HTTP request. I'm just removing here the ID, okay? Perfect. Now I'm going to send the request without an ID. And if I just run this, let's see what's going on. I see that I get a bad request indeed. And it even tells me here, product data must be present in the request body and have the ID property set. So this is working fine. Similarly, if I remove here the body completely and just do a pose without anybody, same thing should happen, I believe, right? So let's try that. Yep, exactly. Same thing happens, right? So the response here didn't change at all. So this is cool. It seems to be working fine. So what do you think? Should we try this XML thing? I'm very curious about it. Let's try it.
Let's try it. We'll see. That's the best thing we can do, I think.
We'll totally see, right? So if I change this to text/XML, all right, let's try to run this. Note that I didn't define, you know, XML is pretty complicated, right? You can also define some schema and all kinds of things, which is one of the reasons why we use it a lot less these days than we used to. But I know that a lot of clients are still consuming XML, so it can be interesting in certain scenario. So here I need to, of course, restore the ID, and now I'm going to send the request. Let's see what's going on. All right, just like before, we go into that. We save, and no, it doesn't seem to be working. We actually get some JSON back. So it's probably a little bit more complicated than just that, but you know, there is always a way to do things. And of course, one you know, brute force way would be to just create the response yourself and return that. Oh, you know what? No. I know what I did. Sorry, I was in the wrong function. No, it's correct. I returned here content type text XML. So I don't believe that this is actually
that
working. You
have to serialize the XML version yourself, and by default, only I think it only needs JSON.
And let's do a little bit of homework ourselves until next time, which is on Monday. We are going to find out the answer for you. If there is a way to do it, definitely we'll let you know on Monday. I think that it's not as simple as that. So we have now executed that. So as a reminder for our viewers, if you go to this learn module, you will find also additional things to do. Here, I would love you for the next time to actually do this module here, add the remaining endpoints for all our API functions, which means that you're going to add an update product, which is going to use, spoiler alert, use put verb, as well as get products with an S, which is going to be a get, but this time it's going to return a list. Or in JavaScript, I think we have arrays, right? Everything's an array, everything's an object, something like that. Cool. Okay, so this is going to work great. And then after that, you can try it out using the environment that we have shown you. And don't go into set up a Cosmos DB instance, because we'll do that together next time. And if you click here, you will see that you go back to the sandbox, and actually the Cosmos DB instance is going to be provided to you for free. So you don't even need an Azure account for that. It's actually quite convenient. You can go back in the first step, create your sandbox, then you can come here and continue to do things. But we'll do that together next time, so you don't need to do it. Let's go back to the slides for now. All right, so this is here the homeworks, all right, that you can do if you go to ak.ms/learn-live.foundation-serverless-dev-module, or maybe Rene just put it actually in the chat, way easier. So in summary, what have we done today? Can you just run us again through the points that we did?
So basically, what we've done today is start implementing the HTTP API. For doing that, you already prepared all your environment locally by installing VS Code, installing Node.js, and installing the Azure extension the VS Code extension for Azure Functions. So basically, you had prepared everything to be able to develop and run the code for functions locally on your machine. And then we started creating new functions for getting products, a particular product, creating products. And we'll leave you with some homework to create the update product function, and also the function to get all the products. Basically, that's what we did in this session. Next time, we'll see how to connect our functions to a real database. So this time, instead of just sending back to the clients fake data or just static data like we did, we'll use this time Cosmos DB to connect the functions to a real database, so we can store and retrieve objects from it directly.
This is actually pretty exciting because that's when things start to be real, right? I feel that now we have developed things locally, everything's local host. That's cool, it works. But then the next time we'll have actually data in the cloud, and Cosmos DB is a super exciting product that we have as well. So we'll go also a little bit there as well. And okay, Rene says scroll toward the end of the readme. I'm not sure if it's an indication for me or what, but definitely something cool. And again, as a reminder, we have here the GitHub repository. In this GitHub repository, you will find everything that is already implemented, including, by the way, the Angular website, right? Because we have a website, and this website, maybe I can show it again since we are almost at the end, but we have actually a little bit time. So this is going to be here. The website is going to look like that. You're going to have here your back to school scenario. You're going to have here the products. And the only thing here, we see that the function is actually working, right? Here I can click to see product/P001. So it's actually also using what we just implemented. One thing that is not going to work is that if you go to administration and edit and try to write things, we block that because everybody is actually using the same thing. So we don't want people to write and to modify those products. But if you install that from the GitHub directly, then you are going to be able to do that as well. Let's take a quick look to the GitHub. So if I go back here to the repo, this is a repo that we have here. And here you see that you have everything. If you go to the source, here, this is where you can see also the application and the JSON, the Angular application. So like this, you should be good to go. Perfect. All right, so the next session is going to happen on the September 14, which is on Monday, same time, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time, which means 5:30 p.m. Paris time, Zurich time. It's going to be 4:30 p.m. in UK, in London. And if you are on the East Coast, forgive me, but it's a little bit complicated. I believe it will be 11:30 a.m. East Coast time. But definitely check it out. And hopefully we will see you on session number 3 of this learning experience. Johan, do you have any closing words that you want to share with us?
Yes, sure. I just wanted to remind that to do your homework and implement the missing function for next time if you're trying to follow what we are doing here. And also, if you have any question after the show, because when we were live, we were trying to ask the question. But if you're watching the replay, don't hesitate to ping us on Twitter. We will share our handle in the chat just after that. Ping me or Laurent or René, and we will be happy to answer your question. And also, just for you, Laurent, I have another thing on my glasses.
Oh, wait. Oh, you love JS. Okay, that's really cool. So can you change it to .NET now? How does it work? No, okay, I know that for you it's really JS. I love the glasses. Very cool, very cool. All right, so now next time we need to make those glasses run an HTTP API using serverless code, and then we'll close the circle, okay?
And that would be a fun project.
That would be a fun project indeed. All right, thank you so much, everybody, for watching. Hopefully this was useful for you and you learned something. Hopefully you can recreate that and work together. This was a Microsoft Learn session talking about building a custom HTTP API using Azure Functions and, in the next section, Cosmos DB. Thank you so much for watching and have a fantastic end of the day.
See you.